Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
Once we now understand again that the issue is this workflow, the huge realization you have is that you're not going to fix these problems in your inbox. Right? You're not going to fix these problems by having better inbox etiquette. You're not going to fix it with batching. You're not going to fix it with turning off notifications. You're certainly not going to fix it by saying, I'm just not going to use email. Because if the hyperactive hive mind is how your organization works right now, if you're not in email, you're not collaborating. Everything's going to get stuck. It's not going to work. You're going to either get fired or forced back on the email again. So once you realize it's the workflow is the problem, you realize, oh, if we're going to solve this, we have to go below the inbox and fix the underlying processes. And that's the huge message in this book, is that if you actually go through and list out, these are actually the processes that are relevant to my job or my work.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Srini and Gareth. Welcome back to the Unmistakable Creativity Hour, or Unmistakable Creativity / Happy Hour. How many drinks have you had so far, Gareth?
This is number one, man.
All right, I'm on number two. Somehow I'm always ahead of you, at least in this. But probably I should aspire to be ahead of you in some other metric. This is not a good metric to optimize by.
This isn't the one that you want to set your watch to. Let's pick on some other ones.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm all about, you know, focusing on metrics that you can control. And, you know, you can control this, but it's probably not an ideal metric to measure your life by. How many glasses of wine ahead of you are, you know, of your friend are you?
Yeah, I don't think that's a KPI that any businesses grow on.
No, me either. But, you know, somehow I'm always ahead of you on that. So clearly, maybe we should, maybe that's a sign, since your business is growing like wildfire and we're, you know, talking about all sorts of random shit here. Anyways, so today we're going to talk about a subject that's near and dear to both of our hearts. I mean, you've built a business probably literally kind of off of these ideas. And what prompted this, believe it or not, was a listener question. So take a listen.
I would love to know how you manage to keep track of all of the different advice you're getting from your coach or the book or the website. And how many browser tabs do you have open right now? And like, how do you keep track of all of that? How do you keep updated with all of that? How do you find anything that's some great advice that you want to get back to later? The minute that it's like off of my plate, I can't find it again. And I'm always trying to find a path back into like where I was before, because you're starting and stopping. And I have a million tabs open right now, and I am terrified of closing any of them because I am midway through so many different things. So yes, how do you all manage that? How do you manage the chaos of everything you're trying to learn and absorb? How?
That's a great question. I mean, that came from Mary Kelly, and she's actually
Mary Kelly.
Yeah, she's one of our community members. And right when I heard it, I was like, oh, perfect. Thank you, Mary. You gave us an idea for an episode. See, this is what happens if you actually call and leave a voicemail. We'll do an entire episode just dedicated to your problem.
That's right.
Can you believe that? But this is actually a problem that we can talk about for an entire hour. We could probably do an entire series on this.
Bam. Oh, well, like you said already, you know, I practically built my business around this very concept. So yeah, we could definitely rap about this for ages.
Well, so I think, you know, what's interesting is that we're kind of in this sort of bizarre stage. You and I, we're kind of on that like straddling line between millennial and whatever you call our generation. Do they call us Gen Y or something? I don't know.
No. It's Gen X. We're between Gen X and millennials. So
yeah,
some because people we happen say that to we be... belong to Xennials, which is like the yeah. hybrid.
Well, yeah, we are kind of hybrid because we're 40. Like, we didn't grow up with the internet native, but we kind of right. saw it get built when yeah. we were of age to like be very influenced by things in popular culture. We were in college, you know, when we saw this yeah. being built. And it's funny.
I don't know about you, but I played internet video games in high school. Did you have a modem with like AOL where no, if your mom picked up the phone?
I had the modem with AOL and I chatted with people randomly. Oh, yeah. I think that was in 10th grade. But the only thing I used the internet for in high school, we talked about before, looking at pictures of Pamela Anderson.
I mean, there are worse things.
Yeah. Too bad I didn't figure out like, yo, Yahoo, you know, something useful.
Right. Too bad we weren't employee number 7 at Google, but you know, it's okay. Yeah, we're making up for it now.
Exactly. But the thing about that is that problem was not really an issue for us back then because I don't even remember browser tabs like in the Netscape days. I don't think you could even have tabs.
I don't think you could.
Well, see, what's funny now is they actually make extensions that will shut down all of your tabs. So Mary asked a good question. How many tabs do we have open right now? How many tabs do you have open?
So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 tabs open right now. Only 2 of them pertain to what I'm actually doing right now, and I should close the rest. Okay, a little context there. Before we started recording, I was building a new thumbnail for my video that's going to publish to YouTube tomorrow. I'm building out a new course, so I was outlining
that.
Stop
making excuses. Just admit that you're distracted.
I'm distracted. You know what? I don't even. What are we doing right now? What are we doing? This is happy hour or something? Hell, I don't know.
Something. Like, okay. First off, I have 3 open right now, but confession. I was late because I had a bunch of apps open. I was literally on SpeakPipe downloading Mary's clip, pulling clips from Descript. I should have done that earlier. You know? So despite the fact that we talk about this, it doesn't mean we're not, you know, we're immune to the same challenges that all of you face. But I think the thing is that we have learned how to design systems, both for our own purposes, to actually deal with this issue. But before we talk tactically about, you know, information overload, like, and how we manage this sort of overwhelm and chaos that I think everybody is feeling, right? I mean, you got text messages coming at you, you got, you know, browser windows open, you got emails, you got social media, like, it's just, we're drowning in a sea of noise. And so what Mary's feeling is actually completely normal. I doubt she's alone, you know, in terms of dealing with this issue of, oh, I have all these things that I want to learn and I want to remember. And then I have 200 different sources. How the hell do I organize all of this, right? So we talked a little bit about this. We're like, you know, right now, one of the big issues for most people is that they spend as much time organizing information as they do doing something with that information. So as a result, you get less out of it. So I think that makes a perfect segue to talk about sort of the foundation of this episode, which, you know, we said we're going to talk about a couple of things. One are the downsides of information overload, the consequences of it, and how it affects us in different ways, negatively, not just in terms of productivity. There are a lot of other negative effects of information overload that we don't actually think about. But then we're going to talk about the positives of reducing it and what happens when you reduce it. Like, a lot of really cool things happen. And then we'll give you some strategies for how we do this and, you know, how we manage all this chaos, because we both have different ways of doing this. And that takes us back to last week's episode that you don't want to follow our advice to the letter. You want to look for sort of underlying principles in what we're telling you and modify them accordingly, because what works for one person may not work for another. So we want to give you some just guidelines for how to think about this, because it is absolutely a big problem. I mean, all right, Gareth, so for you, what have been the negative consequences personally of information overload? Like, this is good. Let's find out.
When I get overloaded, I feel like I'm incredibly unproductive, and I tend to get like a tunnel vision. So as the, you know, for me in particular, I could have like 5, 6 different big projects happening at once, like that are all massive, all, you know, really paramount to you know, what's happening next in my life. And if I'm not giving them equal attention, or at least, you know, showing up for all of them equally, then stuff's going to flow, you know, fall by the wayside. And that's that's massive opportunity lost.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, I'll tell you, it's wasting time. But, you know, when you talk about projects, one of the things Scott Belsky talks about is what he calls energy line prioritization. This has been really helpful for me, where he says you want to prioritize the things that you're working on according to their strategic and economic value for your business or whatever it is, your career. And so at any given time, there'll be some things that are incredibly important and other things that are not. So I think one of the first keys to really dealing with this issue is, you know, understanding, you know, what's important, which means you're probably gonna have to let go of a lot of things that sound interesting, sound cool, that you might want to learn. Because one thing, you know, I'm all for a diversity of inputs, but then, you know, on the flip side of that, you have to be very careful that it's not so diverse that you're just completely scattered, that you get, you know, very little out of everything that you learn, as opposed to getting a lot out of one thing, right? So some people have said, you know, sometimes, and this is coming from a guy who reads multiple books a month, but sometimes you're better off just going deep into one really hard book. Like when I did The Wealth of Nations, which is a pain in the ass to read because the language is archaic and, you know, it's 200 years old and it's and it's dense. I probably spent a good 2 to 3 weeks reading that, which is a long time for me. You know that. I mean, from how quickly I
read. You're usually a couple of days in a book. If that.
Yeah. I mean, I can, I can get through most books in a day if I want to, but the thing is that that forces you to think a lot more about the information that you're consuming, because I think there's this sort of idea that, you know, oh, the more you consume, the more that you learn. And the problem is that that doesn't really work. I mean, yes, because we have an abundance of content, you know, people believe that. But the irony of it is, you know, with the abundance of content, you have a scarcity of knowledge. Ronnie Chang did this comedy special on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it. And there's this great section where he goes like, who knew having access to all of human knowledge would make the entire society so stupid?
It's true.
Like, you have access to so much, and yet how much of it is relevant? What's the most moronic, irrelevant thing that you watched or clicked on this week?
Oh man, it was probably some tabloid junk, you know, like Anna Kendrick or Will Smith, or some celebrity, you know, did something. Yeah, the Will Smith Oscars things definitely consumed like a number of clicks, and everybody has an opinion about it. And 99.9% of the population does not know Will Smith personally.
Yeah. I mean,
isn't that
whatever?
Absurd? I mean, is that ridiculous?
Well, I remember watching segment on CNN about this, and this woman, the reporter, opened it up. She's like, we have a war going on in Ukraine. Right. We have like a potential hunger crisis. And she's like, and this is what's dominating. And this is the damn reporter saying that in the segment about this exact thing.
Right. As she, you know, writes or you know, creates news to get more clicks to make her more relevant. It's a sickening downward spiral that we see on the internet with overload of information.
Well, okay. So I'll have to actually just be, you know, look at my YouTube history here. So that I can bring up something, but I'm pretty sure it was something I watched on Vice News. I don't know why I really like Vice News. So like when I sit down in front of my TV and I put on YouTube, that's usually my first default is, oh, let me search for Vice, but let me see what we got here. So what did I watch on Vice last night? Tell you yes.
Well, Pamela Anderson slapping Will Smith.
No. The world's most complex catfishing scam.
Oh, that sounds like it really moved your life forward in positive and meaningful ways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No question.
Wow.
But
hold on. And I don't mean to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but I know that you're a supporter of the fact that the brain needs downtime. So how do you differentiate between, you know, when you're just kind of like seeking entertainment versus I'm actively learning?
That's a good question. And I think that actually is a good concept. Mary was on our habits workshop and we talked about the role that environments play, right? So I think for me, it's where I'm at, right? So if I'm at my desk, The desk is for work, but when I'm sitting on the couch, it's, you know, okay, I sit on the couch for entertainment. Like, I don't do work when I'm on the couch. I mean, I'll, you know, like anybody else, I'll pop up on my laptop and look at things on the internet just for boredom, which is not the best thing. But for the most part, like if I'm sitting on the couch, that's when I know, or I've changed into pajamas. Those are two boundaries. It's like, okay, if I change my clothes, I'm no longer in work clothes.
I think you may be the only person I know who wears pajamas.
Pajamas are amazingly comfortable. I never realized how comfortable they were until my sister bought me a pair. And keep in mind, I was like, this was like a year or two ago. My dad's like, you're sleeping in your shorts and your jeans. Like, this is ridiculous. My sister, then I got them. I was like, these are amazing. She was like, yeah, why do you think people like to stay in their pajamas all day?
Footed? Or did you get footed pajamas? Is it a onesie with like the trap door in the back so that you can use the restroom?
No onesies. I mean, I'm sure I'd look sexy as hell in a onesie.
Oh, I'm sure you would, bro.
You'd be amazed, man. So it's kind of crazy, but you feel more relaxed when you put on pajamas. And Arianna Huffington actually talked about this in her book on sleep, The Sleep Revolution. Yeah, she talked about how you want to have like a separate a boundary that basically indicates like, oh, okay, once I'm in these clothes, you know, at this time, whatever. I mean, I'll tell you, even something as simple as lighting, like, you know, we have these fluorescent lights and it hadn't occurred. I don't know why up until now it never occurred to me, but, you know, I have this lamp in my bedroom where the light is a lot dimmer. And I'm like, why aren't we doing that in our like room where we watch TV? Like, this is our relaxing time. I was like, this, you know, I have two of these lamps. So I put it out here. I was like, wow, I wish we had figured this out sooner because it's a lot, you know, more pleasant with the light. Stuff like that makes a big difference. But I mean, if I went through my bookmarks, I'm sure it would be, you know, just a world of bullshit. Random things I've Googled, like, you know, I don't think I'm alone in that. You know, I mean, there's a reason Google is a $1 billion company. Like, billions of people are doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. So not everything we do is productive. For sure.
Well, and that is for sure. But I think it speaks to the importance of sort of understanding what is worth paying attention to and what is not worth paying attention to and having some semblance of prioritization, which makes a perfect segue into a clip. So take a listen.
Somewhere out there in the world, there's somebody probably working on something very similar to your idea, and they're not distracted. And I think they're going to get farther. Your idea might die, a short, slow death or a long, quick one, and theirs might succeed just because they're really engaged with it. Do you think that Michelangelo would have been able to paint the Sistine Chapel if he was checking Twitter every 6 seconds? There are rewards for sustained, focused attention. They aren't immediate rewards. That's the problem. I get an immediate reward if I respond to a text right now instead of later. That's one thing off my to-do list. But what we try to teach our children is delayed gratification. To some extent, we need to treat ourselves like children. We need to parent ourselves in this respect and allow ourselves to delay the instant gratification of multitasking in favor of the delayed gratification of an idea really well developed.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Oh man, so much to unpack there and so many different layers of cool stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was from Daniel Levitin, who wrote this fantastic book called The Organized Mind. In fact, The Organized Mind influenced a lot of my thinking around how we organize knowledge work, or at least how I did, you know. And one thing that I realized was that, you know, from reading that book, in your physical space, you have designated locations for everything, right? It's not like right. You put your kitchen your keys in the kitchen sink and your butter knife, you know, in your bathroom cabinet. You know, life would be a shit show if you did that. You know, it's sure. Like it's not, you know, you don't put your, you know, toiletries in the shoe closet and your silverware in the bathroom. And you just have designated locations that allow you to remember where things are at. And that's one big problem with information management. But the funny thing is that even that, when you're dealing with knowledge work, is challenging because of the fact that the number of locations in which you could store something in a digital space are fucking infinite. Like, there's no end to it. It's like, oh, here's, I can create another Dropbox folder. I can bookmark 300 things. I mean, this is why I'm such a big proponent of MEM, because it really is a place to centralize information. So that's one sort of first idea, I think, here is to aggregate the flow of information into one source, whatever the hell it is. I mean, for you, I mean, a lot of ways you do that with Airtable. I do it with MEM. You know, that's one big thing that Scott Belsky talked about, is he was like, you want to reduce the number of places you have to visit. Yes. And a lot of this can be done through automation. Like, that's one of the big things that, you know, talk about, is part of the reason automation is so valuable is it prevents you from having to go from place to place. But talk to me about things that, you know, give you instant gratification on the internet, Gareth.
Oh man. I mean, as trivial as it sounds, like putting a personal post on, you know, social media, personal, not business, and then having, you know, the likes and the comments roll in, you know, those little things. We know that those give us those dopamine hits, those instant gratifications. Yeah. And, you know, I should say that I keep my personal social media very separate from my professional social media, so that only the people I know personally are on my, you know, personal social media accounts. But, you know, it still matters to me when they respond to my latest, you know, quip or, you know, post.
Well, you know, for the sake of an example, we're going to bring up Gareth's latest quip and see what he's about.
Oh, gee, I don't even know what I put on there. I try not to do personal. You know that my mantra is, if it's not making me money, I don't want to waste doing it on social media, but I do it anyways.
Let's see. So here are Gareth's latest posts. And these were 3 days ago.
This is supposed to be personal.
Yeah, no, this is what we're going to do. Let's see. I guess it's a good thing that Will Smith doesn't swear in his rap music.
Come on, that was really funny. Everybody should like that.
Wait, so why is that? So I didn't even get it. So clearly I'm...
Because he just slapped Chris Rock, right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, you know, 20 years ago, he's the guy, he was like, you know, I'm so good at my rap that I don't have to swear in it. And that's what makes me so good and unique. And he clearly has some anger management issues. So I thought that was a pretty funny quip. Boom.
Let's see. Yeah, you're actually pretty good, man. You're sporadic about this.
Well,
like, it looks like there's like 9 days between posts. I mean, I probably have a bit more than normal. So my most recent one was my video snowboarding, which was actually pretty fucking cool as far as I'm concerned.
That wasn't okay. I saw it. It was really good. If you're not on Rinny social, he put up a pretty sweet little snowboard. Yeah.
You can find it on Instagram too. Cause I have no life and I'm, you know, ridiculous. But yeah, no, I snowboarded well, but that's an example. So I couldn't be posting that while I'm snowboarding. I can't even be thinking about how cool is this video going to look. You know, I had to focus on the thing I was doing in order to even have it look that good. You know, and some snowboarder in audience is like, you look like a fucking kook. Like, you don't look as cool as you think you do. Although I think that turned out pretty cool.
I thought it looked great. I mean, I watched it. I haven't done anything afterwards other than watch it, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so, you know, it takes us to a point. It's like, you know, but imagine if I were prioritizing publishing snowboard videos while I was trying to write one of my books.
I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, think about it. Like, think about, you know, the first book, right? I was surfing all the time. I was almost, I mean, I probably did post a handful of pictures, but the thing is that all takes away from your ability to sustain focus. So, let's talk, you know, so that's one huge negative, you know, impact is that you just can't get things done when you're trying to do so many things, you know.
Right.
Greg McEwen talks about this. He's like, you want to, you know, focus on what you can reasonably get done in a given day. And so that's one thing that happens. So this is something interesting I noticed with people is that, you know, they'll write down like 25, 30, 40 tasks, whatever, right?
Right.
And then if you get them to say, okay, like, forget about doing that, write down 5 tasks, you know, and the reason for this is it turns out that your brain makes progress towards a goal based on the perceived distance towards a goal, which comes from some of the work that Sean Acor did in, I believe, the Happiness Advantage, right? Mm-hmm. So when you write a to-do list in the morning and there's 20 things on it and you cross off 3, you're like, shit, I have 17 more to go. But if you have 5 on the list and you cross off 3, you're like, oh, only 2 more to go. And the funny thing is you can write down like 17 things, you get 2 of them done, and you keep doing that every day. By the end of the week, you get what, 10 things done?
Sure.
But if you write 5 things down and you get all of them done, by the end of the week, you've gotten 25 tasks completed. So ironically, it's about doing less in order to get more done. But it's not just less. It's less of what's unimportant, more of what's truly important, like prioritizing the essential over the optional, you know, or right. Non-essential. And, you know, whatever it is, essential is different to every one of us, right? It's whatever it is that's supporting your professional goals. So distraction is like one of the many consequences of information overload and what Mary was talking about. But there are some serious other negative effects that actually hurt your ability to be a clear thinker, to think critically, to process information, because that's the other thing. So this is one thing, you know, Mary, my advice to you is actually to consume less, but be more deliberate about what you consume. And instead of taking sort of a haphazard approach, right, of everything that captures your interest, try to approach it with some sort of structured learning goal. It's like, okay, I have this subject, I want to learn about this. So right now, because we're redesigning our community to focus on teaching, I'm actually reading a lot of books about education and instructional design and looking at, okay, how do you design experiences that lead to real changes for people? And so even the way that I'm filtering right now, when I'm reading anything related or non-related, you know, I just finished reading this book called The Hidden Habits of Geniuses. And I was noticing a lot of things and I'm like, oh, this is actually really relevant to what I'm doing. So even when you're taking notes, you want to filter for what is important to you at the moment. So that way you become more deliberate, but you can, you know, and of course, like there are going to be things that might be interesting later. And we'll talk a little bit about how to deal with, you know, the things you're curious about, but can't attend to now. You know, cause we need that too. You need to be able to do that, but we'll talk about how you actually do that. But I think that the consequences are the more dangerous consequences, like productivity declines are actually a really minor consequence of information overload. the bigger ones, I think, affect society at large, you know, like myopic viewpoints, confirmation bias, filter bubbles, and echo chambers, all of which have, you know, huge implications for how we behave as a society. You know, we talked about context and bullshit last week. And the thing is that when you overconsume media, first, you have no ability to be creative because you don't have time to reflect on and synthesize the information that you process, you know? And so I try to limit, this is one of the reasons I limit myself to one interview a day. And I try to limit the amount of meetings I have with people.
Because of
just like, okay, if we don't have to meet, why should we?
Meetings are the biggest time suck. I this is my personal philosophy. The most valuable thing that you have is your time. And nobody, I shouldn't say nobody, but very few people in this world will respect it as much as they should. And if you don't require people to respect your time, they will not do it. And so, yeah, when you're getting, you know, assigned meetings all day long, you have no control over your schedule. I don't understand how anybody expects you to be productive when half of your workday is spent in meetings. Like, what do you, unless you're literally paid to be coaching somebody directly during that meeting, that's not very productive use, not a very productive use of time.
Or, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, people say you fill the time allotted for a given task, right? I worked this company where I remember calling in from Costa Rica and I'm listening to the CEO and the VP of marketing discuss the broken air conditioner in the office for an hour. I'm like, the hell?
What and the funny a waste thing is, of everyone's this, time.
Yeah. And this meeting could have easily been 15 minutes and he's ended up being a 2.5 hour meeting every Monday. And, you know, like, don't meet just because it's Monday. Like, there are a lot of, you know, things people do by default without questioning them. And funny enough, a lot of those are ineffective practices for, you know, that are completely antiquated. It's just like, if you don't need to meet, cancel the meeting. You know, that's my attitude. And then Mark Cuban has the best philosophy on meetings. Like, I don't even attend meetings unless somebody's writing me a check.
That's a good philosophy.
Yeah. Mark Cuban's a billionaire, so he knows a thing.
I mean, obviously it's working out for him. My personal philosophy on meetings is I have one team meeting with my staff every week. And any other time they need to get a hold of me, like if there's an emergency, they can Slack message me. If it's an absolute emergency, they have to talk to me right then they have my phone number and they can call me and I'll pick up as soon as I'm available. But only one scheduled meeting for 1 hour on the books every week.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I mean, Naval Ravikant talks about this in his podcast on How to Get Rich Without Getting Lucky. He said that he has huge, amounts of white space. And even the guy who's the CEO of LinkedIn, I don't remember his name, not Reid Hoffman, but the other guy, Jeff something or other, he has like blocks of white space on his calendar. So think about it like, you know, a guy who's like literally second in charge or first in command at LinkedIn is having white space on his calendar. So that's one big thing is white space, but the tendency for a lot of people is in that white space to just fill it with anything and everything. A couple of things there, right? So I want to come back to strategy later in terms of how we deal with this. But I think that what I'm also concerned about is how information overload leads to myopic consumption habits. Like, you have a tendency, right, to consume the same thing. And I this is what I said in the article I wrote, is that the paradox of information diversity is how myopic it's made our consumption habits. And myopic consumption is an occupational hazard for online marketers, self-help junkies, people who watch political news, and anyone who wants to build an audience for their work. People who read self-help books keep reading self-help books. Whether they watch Fox News or CNN, the news they consume becomes the filter through which they see the world. Mm-hmm. And these consumption habits cause people to draw wildly inaccurate conclusions about the world, themselves, and society at large. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you take a website like Medium, and Medium gives you a very distorted view of what the world is like, because who are the writers on Medium? They're sort of, you know, people like you and me who live in places like Boulder or Silicon Valley or New York.
Right.
And the thing is that if you go to the middle of the country, it's not like that at all. You know, I remember driving down Main Street in Utah thinking, no wonder these people are pissed off. And like, this place is, you know, dead. This is like a ghost town at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon.
I mean, that's definitely true. I think, you know, for guys like you and me in particular, you know, we've kind of grown up in bigger cities.
Yeah.
and kind of been around big city living our whole life. So it's really it's hard for us to even understand what it looks like in rural America. But I'm conscious that it's there. Yeah,
even rural America, like so for even you know like suburban America, urban America, like in the middle of the country is very different. There are a lot of so Greg when he went around the country said that the coasts are not representative of the country. When Andrew Yang was here. When he was on his presidential campaign, he said, he was like, you don't see what's happening in all these places. And so you have this very distorted worldview of like digital nomads and everybody should start a business and follow their passion. And so I think it's important that we expose ourselves to different viewpoints. But that's one consequence is myopic consumption habits. Of course, when you have myopic consumption habits, then you end up in an echo chamber where you hear people saying the same thing, you know, over and over. So this becomes your sort of default view. And then finally, the third consequence of being, you know, in a filter bubble and an echo chamber is that you end up having confirmation bias. So like it all adds up. Right, it just starts to stack up when so it's funny because it's like information overload and information diversity. The funny thing is, despite the diversity, people tend to primarily consume the same type of content over and over again. And unfortunately, that's largely due to algorithms. Like if you watch YouTube, I don't know about you, like when I started watching Seth Meyers. The next thing I know, all my recommendations are Trevor Noah, you know, John Stewart, like John Oliver, like, and, you know, and so that's the thing. You got to be really careful with that. But the thing is that it's also very difficult to have any original thinking when you're constantly consuming. Yeah. You know, like I remember I wrote this post that I think Inc. ended up featuring, and it was that excessive consumption is what kills creativity. You know, so you're trying to, you know, consume so much that you're synthesizing very little of it. You know, that, and which brings us back to the sort of full circle of where we started. But, you know, let me turn to you, Gareth. Like, what do you make of this?
I mean, in general, I think we as a society overconsume information. We put an emphasis on the ability to learn and we de-emphasize the ability to have output and create and think. Yes.
Yeah. I think what we're doing is we're mistaking information for knowledge and knowledge for wisdom.
Yeah, I know. I've heard you say that or something similar before. So break that down for the audience in case it's the first time.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what I realized. This was when I was teaching the MEM course, you know, it just kind of came out as a phrase and one of the students thought it was pretty catchy. And I was like, yeah, I guess it makes sense. I said, you know, what you consume is information. What you capture is knowledge and what you create is wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you consume something, it's information because until you do something with it, it's not particularly useful. Like I could read 100 books. Like, so yeah, it's like people take courses, right? They go through all the modules and you probably have a couple of students like this, I'm sure, in some of your Airtable courses. And I'm sure I have people who are like watched every video, but never did anything with it, right? It's like, oh, cool.
Right.
And so if you take a course, you don't do any of the lessons, then you don't really have knowledge. You just got more information.
Right.
And so the result of that is nothing often. And so that's why you have all these people who, you know, read 1,000 self-help books and their lives are still a mess, you know, because they don't actually do anything. It's like, there's a certain point. Like I remember walking to the Boulder bookstore at one point and I'm like, what the fuck? Why do I feel like I've read every damn book here in the self-help section? I literally was like, I don't think I need any more of these books. I need to go do something with this information.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Information.
Yeah. Well, at a certain point, you have to take action or it's meaningless. Like, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. Like, why would you buy another book if you haven't done anything from all of the books that you've read
that
so
actually,
far?
Yeah, exactly. So that's one way to deal with it. It's like, okay, I haven't done anything with this yet, right? And I think that there's this sort of distinction that I make between personal knowledge management and personal knowledge generation. And I think there's too much emphasis on management and not enough emphasis on generation. So that's one thing, right? So you've got like all this information that you don't do anything with. And so it's not very useful. But the thing is, then when you capture it, when you take notes on it, now capture is about more than just copying and pasting. Like this is something that I've really, honestly, this is one of the big lessons I've had this year. Because like most of us, I was pretty much just standard. You know what? I read a book. I'll take a bunch of pictures of the quotes, import them into Readwise, and I'll call it a day. Right. And we just had Sanka Ahrens here who wrote How to Take Smart Notes. And he was like, well, the problem with that approach is what do you do with it? Like you've used, even if you bookmark all these articles that you've read or want to read, you know, and you read them, then what? If you don't do anything with them. So the question is, how do you do something with information so that it becomes knowledge? And that's where this whole concept of taking smart notes comes in. So, I've talked to you about this, Gareth, a little bit, and you can find tutorials on my YouTube channel for Mem and learn more about this and the maximizeyouroutput.com course. I'll include a link. We also have a free e-course on how to take smart notes that I just created. But this is something that takes us back to just higher education in general, right? So when you're in school, what do you learn to do? You learn to memorize and regurgitate information.
Right.
Which is great for passing tests. It's actually useless for practical application.
Everything
of
else
knowledge.
In life?
For practical application of knowledge, memorization is probably one of the most, wasteful things you can do.
Let me ask you this, and to prove this point, I'm sure in fifth grade, well, maybe not. Were you in Canada in fifth grade, or had you made it across to the U.S.?
No, I was in the U.S.
Did you have the chapter in fifth grade where you had to learn all of the states and their capitals?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That's pretty standard for all, U.S. students for, U.S. history, fifth grade. Can you personally tell me more than 10 capitals? That would be a 20% success rate if you could do 10 capitals for the states.
I didn't even know what the capital of Colorado was.
Oh, come on, dude. It's Denver.
I didn't know that until I saw the Capitol building when I went to drop a friend off there.
Oh, my God, like, you're killing me. Do you know what it is in California where we grew up?
Sacramento.
Okay, that's good. What is it in Texas? Because I know you came from Texas at one point. Oof, it's not Dallas, is it?
It's not Dallas. I don't think it's Austin either.
No, it can't be. It's got to be some... Is it Fort Lauderdale?
No. Fort Lauderdale is in Florida.
Shoot. See, this is how bad I was at regurgitating fifth grade information. I got 100% on that Capitals test.
I keep in mind, I lived in Texas and I don't remember. I think it's San Antonio.
No, San Antonio. That's probably what it is. We can look this up.
Yeah,
sorry, the Alamo. For all of our listeners who are in Texas, by the way.
Yeah, I know the Alamo is in San Antonio, so I think San Antonio is the capital of Texas.
Dang, dude. I'm telling you. See, this is the thing. So if anybody makes an argument that memorization is useful in terms of retaining information, here we are, unable to even come up with three capitals.
Well, places that we lived, for God's sake.
Well, for you, I never lived in Texas, but yeah.
No. I'm pretty sure it's San. See, it's funny. I know that the Alamo is in San Antonio. You know why I know that? Because I went there. You know,
right.
So that's the thing. Like, that's an experience. So it stayed, right? Like, I know that. Like, I had memories of that because I experienced it. I saw it. All that. So, what is the capital of Texas? Did you find out?
Shit, it's Austin. We suck.
Yep. All right, we're idiots. All right, we're total. All right, apologies to those of you who are in Austin.
Oh man,
we're a bunch of morons. Yeah, but there you go. I mean, so that just proves our point. So that was the thing when I went through the Wealth of Nations, I realized was, you know, I took an economics class in college. I got a C. Yeah,
right.
I, you know, did everything. I memorized the supply and demand equations. I, you know, highlighted my textbook. But when I took the Wealth of Nations, I didn't do that. What I did was I went through all my highlights and underlines, and then I rewrote them each one in my own words. And I suddenly made so much more sense. Like, and then I thought about, okay, how does this apply? Right. So there are a couple of things you want to think about. One is, okay, I need to reconstruct this knowledge from memory as opposed to just, you know, capturing it. Because when you reconstruct it from memory, you go through what they call retrieval practice, and it's hard. It's definitely harder. It, you know, is much slower. It's more time consuming, but it's more valuable. So somebody saw, you know, when I did the first video on sort of Zettelkast and then SmartNotes, so like, this seems like a lot of effort. I'm like, yeah, it is. Yeah, my friend Ryan.
Yeah,
because
I'm actually trying to learn something, and I'm not just trying to tick a box that says, "Well, no, I was productive today."
So Ryan Holiday has this note card system, and it's very time consuming and tedious. Yeah, he does physical note cards for all the books that he reads.
Wow.
And he has 10 boxes of this stuff. And he learned that system from Robert Greene, who learned it as a researcher in Hollywood. And Robert, as we talked about, is like the fucking James Cameron of publishing. And he writes one book every 10 years and becomes, you know, the New York Times bestseller. And Ryan now writes, you know, like I said last week, he's like the James Patterson of nonfiction book publishing. He just keeps just churning out books, and they're all good, which is what's amazing. But the thing is that system is tedious and it's time consuming. He told me, he said, you know, 9 out of 10 times those note cards lead to nothing. He said, but one of them is enough to build a career off of. He had the idea for The Obstacle is the Way, I think 4 years before he wrote the book. He wrote it down on a note card. I came up with the idea for Unmistakable, the second book I did with a publisher, the framework, the surf metaphor. I wrote that down 4 years before I ever wrote the book.
This demonstrates to me the need for people to recall information when they want to recall it. And one of the things that was stated in the question that Mary posed was, how do I, you know, let go of these things when I'm afraid that when I close a tab, I'm going to lose it and I'm never going to be able to pick that up again?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and maybe I think part of it is the willingness to lose things and then the willingness to try to remember. You know, the combination of those two things together is important. And so as a result, you start to filter a lot more. But yeah, like I found that when I'm rewriting these notes in my own words, I can, you know, put together the outline for this episode based on Mary's question in 5 minutes because I had so many notes on this subject from all the books that I've read, but all of them were in my own words. They were my own sort of interpretations of what I had learned from each one of these people. And how I started to think about this. It was like drawing, you know, different insights from each person and combining them, as opposed to trying to just take in information. So that's the first thing. So information becomes knowledge when you actually, you know, rewrite it, when you synthesize it, when you process it, when you think about it, when you reflect on it. You know, it's not knowledge just because you've consumed it. You have to really kind of take the time to understand it. That's where I would say is information becomes knowledge when you understand it well enough that you could explain it to somebody else in your words and they'd know what you were talking about.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And you think about it, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier, with the way that we're taught to learn in college, in school and in
university. We don't know shit about Texas or geography, apparently. Yeah, and I was in honors geography, dude.
That's on brand.
All right, since we did states, let's do countries.
Oh God, I'm even worse about that. Seoul, South Korea, because I've been there.
What's the capital? Is Paris the capital of France?
I'm sure it is, but I'm going to look it up now and probably be wrong.
What's the capital of Italy?
Oh shit!
I don't know. I'm telling you, I got straight A's in honors geography. I don't know any of this. I can't rattle off the top of my...
Capital France is Paris. Okay, that's good. Yeah. Italy. I knew it was... I should have known that Paris was the capital because I know that's what the Germans invaded.
I mean, I believe... I'm trying to think in India. I think New Delhi is the capital of India.
That sounds right.
The fact that like I'm Indian and I can't say that with 100% certainty just proves our point.
Dude, I don't even know the capital of Canada. They're never going to let me in. It's Ottawa. I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, that's right. It is Ottawa. Yeah.
I would have guessed it's funny, right? Ottawa. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't even think. Like, I knew all these cities in Canada. I lived in Canada and I didn't know that. I didn't remember that. You know, I couldn't recall that.
But see, it's because there's so much information in our lives that we never processed, right?
Well, that's the thing. So I've been reading this book called Make It Stick. And one of the quotes they had there was about how rote memorization creates the illusion of knowledge.
Yeah. So true. You know?
And that's one big problem with this is that you're not really playing an active role in the construction of all. So remember what, you know, what's his name? The bullshit studies laboratory guy said last week in that clip that we played, right? About students, John Petrocelli. So clearly I can't even remember people's names. So memorization is useless, but the funny thing is I had to think of the concept that I associated him with. Right.
Right.
But remember, one of the things he said is that you play an active role in the construction of knowledge, right? It's not just the and that's the problem with note taking in its current form as most people do it. And so, you know, to Mary, like if you have a dozen browser tabs open, maybe you choose one and go deep. And really try to manage that. I think that there's one other thing we have to think about, which is, okay, great. So we've given you an idea on how to consume, but then how do you manage all this? Which makes a perfect segue into a clip. Take a listen.
We're on email too much or this or that, but let's just talk about the value of focus and how to train yourself to focus and why it's important. And the feedback was, wait a second, I don't think you realize how impossible it is to do this. And so I really got interested in this question. Why is it so hard? Like, why are companies so consistently set up in such a way that it's very difficult to actually do the thing they hired you to do, to use your brain and produce value? And it was a massive story, right? That's what I discovered. I needed 5 years to write it because there are so many different threads that were wrapped up tightly that when you pulled on them, there was this huge, magnificent story that explained, why do we work this way? Why is it so bad? What the future is going to hold?
Is that my buddy, Cal?
Yeah, well, have you guys actually spoken yet?
No, not yet, but we're going to be buddies soon, mark my words. No, you connected us, thanks for that. We're going to reconnect when it makes sense. But
cool.
When I first was introduced through your podcast to the ideas that Cal, you know, espouses, I was very resistant to them. You know, basically, he talked about this idea about social media being so destructive to our personal and professional development. And I was just like, no, I care too much about my dopamine hits. I can't. I could never imagine a life without social media. I know that's not exactly what he's talking to in as many words here in this clip, but I just have to say that for me personally, having slowly embraced those ideals, it's made a world of difference in my productivity.
Yeah. I mean, I think for anybody who does, like even I remember I took 30 days off of social and I was just like, wow, you know, I upgraded the cabinets of my house. Man, I found all sorts of things to do that were just weird. Like I read a lot. I remember I redecorated my apartment. I was like, wow, I'm like, all right, cool. And
but you're far from the first guru who is, has made that choice to go off social for either a short or an extended period of time. There's a reason for that.
The problem is that he actually talked about this in one of his recent episodes of the Deep Work podcast. Yeah, where he said, you know, people say, oh, I'm trying to do a digital detox. And he's like, yeah, that's the problem. He said, because, you know, when you think about it as a detox, you're thinking about it from the standpoint of addiction, as opposed to a digital declutter, just the framing alone. So he said, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, take these tools out of your life for 30 days and, you know, you declutter, like just delete everything and say, okay, you know, is my life noticeably better or worse without these things? And if it's not any better or any worse, then you don't, you know, bring it back into your life. Because there's always something to be on, right? It's like, oh, everybody should be on this TikTok, whatever. It's like, okay, you know, and again, it takes the idea, even with social, you can actually choose to go deep rather than, you know, like be on everything. I'm like, all right, I doubled down on Twitter for a while because it was, you know, where I met a lot of people. Then I doubled down on Facebook for a brief period because I was like, oh, great. People are, I'm getting feedback on my writing to write this book. So I'll use Twitter or Facebook. But, the thing is, this whole idea of ubiquitous, you know, sort of be everywhere, you know, on social mindset is nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense for the majority of people, even though people like Gary Vaynerchuk talk about this. It's like, well, yeah, Gary Vaynerchuk has an army of fucking slaves, basically, you know, desperate for his attention, who are doing all of this for him. You know, it's like Gary basically probably says, hey, I have an idea. It's like he records a video, he probably texts it to somebody and somebody else probably takes it from there.
Oh, you know, come on. He's not manually uploading his videos to social, which brings us to the other point that nobody should be manually doing anything on social. Like if you're relying on social to run your business, then you should definitely have automated processes that puts that up for you. And there's no reason not to. There's so many different platforms.
Well, so that's the big thing here is this all kind of takes us into a discussion of workflow, which is, okay, how do you, you know, navigate all this information? So Mary made a good point. How do you keep track of it all, right? And I think that I probably have to deal with more information than you do between podcast guests, you know, books, you know, things that I'm writing, things that I'm interesting, things that I'm reading. And a lot of it has to do with sort of filtering and deciding that the overwhelming majority of what I'm coming across is irrelevant. And limiting myself to X number of pieces of content. I mean, part of it is just putting in some parameters. That's easier said than done. And we'll give you some tools to do that with. So the browser tab thing is kind of mind-boggling to me. Like I'll be on meetings with people and I'm just like, how do you get anything done? You have 30 browser tabs open. Mm-hmm. Like what's in each one of those browser tabs that all of them need to be open? Nothing. That's the other thing. It's like this, you know, gives you a sense of, okay, what is important? But this is actually also a big workflow design issue, which, you know, brings up perfect time for another clip from Cal.
Once we now understand again that the issue is this workflow, the huge realization you have is that you're not going to fix these problems in your inbox, right? You're not going to fix these problems by having better inbox etiquette. You're not going to fix it with batching. You're not going to fix it with turning off notifications. You're certainly not going to fix it by saying, I'm just not going to use email, because if the hyperactive hive mind is how your organization works right now, if you're not in email, you're not collaborating. Everything's going to get stuck. It's not going to work. You're going to either get fired or forced back onto email again. So once you realize it's the workflow is the problem, you realize, oh, if we're going to solve this, we have to go below the inbox and fix the underlying processes. And that's the huge message in this book, is that if you actually go through and list out, these are actually the processes that are relevant to my job or my work.
I mean, you've built a million-dollar business off of that, you know, 47-second clip. And it's true. This is largely a process thing. So part of this is actually coming up with a process that you follow consistently. I mean, for me, when it comes to consumption, I have a very methodical process. It's the same for everything, right? So when I read a book, I highlight, I underline things, I write down, you know, a series of what Sunk Errands calls fleeting notes, where I'm like, okay, on page X, it says Y, on page, you know, two, it says this, and I'll do maybe about 15 or 20 of those for the books that I read that I know have information that I'll probably want to use at some point, and or that, you know, is interesting enough to me that I'm like, all right, this is cool, like I want to capture this. But I'm filtering. And then, of course, because I'm rewriting it in my own words, that's when it becomes knowledge. But knowledge becomes wisdom when you go out and take what you've learned, synthesized it and processed it, rewritten it in your own words, taking the time to reflect on it, and then you go and apply it to your own life and see what the results are, right? And that's the thing. So everything you're hearing in this podcast, for example, you know, you could listen to it, and that's just information. You know, you listen to it and get on with your life. It's like, great. You know, you've just contributed to the problem of information overload. Right. Whereas you might be better off saying, okay, I'm going to listen to the first 20 minutes and give some thought to what these guys said. And I'm going to, you know, just write down my thoughts on it in a journal. And I'm going to take some time to think about that. And then what I'm going to do after that is I'm going to write about it. And then I'm going to go test it out. And then I'm going to come back and revise the knowledge so that it's my knowledge, not, you know, Srini's information. So that's the thing, is that you basically take it and you modify it so that it fits the context of your life. And, you know, and so for me, that's one thing. So then as far as dealing with, you know, podcast guests and everything else, believe it or not, it's Gareth's business that solves that problem for me, where a lot of it is automated. I don't, you know, send emails to podcast guests to let them know about upcoming, you know, episodes. Like, they just get a link that's automatically sent to them when I put it into a spreadsheet. They get a link that I automate, you know, when I notify them that their episode's live, and even loading the content into social now, I've built automations to do that. And then as far as what was Mary's talking about, like, when I come across information that's interesting, I just capture it all in Mem so I can come back to it at any time. It's really in my way. If I, anything that I want to remember, I can, you know, and I can always find it because it's all in one place, as opposed to browser tabs, which to me, a big thing was aggregating the flow of information. And I don't know, I may have told this story last time about my parents in the stupid grocery store in Houston. Maybe we talked about that. We're on the Optimizing for Laziness. Well, I wrote about this in a newsletter. So when my parents when we were growing up, we lived in Texas, and when you're living in College Station in your, you know, late 80s, not
is
a lot of
capital?
Emails there.
Is that the capital of Texas?
No.
I can't remember.
I'm sure now we've pissed off all our listeners in Texas. But the thing is that we would drive to Houston to buy Indian groceries. Okay. And the thing is that we had to go to a different grocery store to get like every other item on the list. It was like, oh, they don't have this, but they have it at this other grocery store. I'm like, doesn't one store just have everything we need? Like, why do we have to go? And so, like, literally, there was nothing my sister and I dreaded more than that trip to Houston, because it was an all-day affair. Yeah. And, you know, you leave College Station, there's nothing between College Station and Houston. And it's just like, you know, cows for miles on end. And me and my sister, like, arguing in the backseat with our parents yelling at us to shut the hell up. But you get there and it's like, okay, wait a minute. And then, you know, you go to an electronics store to buy something. The only saving grace was that we got a really good Indian lunch out of it. Because Houston has really good Indian food.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, but it's a bit like visiting. Just imagine if you had to go to a different grocery store to get every item on your list. It's like, oh, I got to go to the bakery to get bread. Sure. I got to go to the dairy to get eggs. I got to go to the butcher to get meat, which is how we did.
It's funny it used to be that way, right? Because you specialize, like, I'm the butcher, I'm the patisserie, I'm the whatever.
But just imagine that you had to go and buy each individual item. Mm-hmm. At a different place. Like, I'm going to the peanut butter store to buy peanut butter. I'm going to go to the you know, cereal store to buy cereal. That would be ridiculous. But that is how most people manage information on the internet. They have so many places they have to go to get the information that they need. And which kind of takes us back to the beginning, which is like, okay, centralizing information is a big part of this. When you centralize the information that you need access to, that makes a world of difference. And you can build automations so that everything flows into one place. You know how to do that, Gareth. You can have very deliberate capture systems. But I think a big part of it is you don't actually have to be technologically sophisticated. You can do this in very simple ways. Like, that is another thing that's really important to emphasize.
That's true.
You can do this with pen and paper. I mean, like, if, you know, Mary has 50 browser tabs open, one thing you could say is, okay, out of these browser tabs, which are important enough to write down? Because if you write them down, there's numerous advantages on writing on paper, which writer Carol talks about in the bullet journal. By default, you're restricted to the amount of information that you can capture on pen and paper, which forces you to prioritize and be much more deliberate about what you capture. Then you could be like, all right, I know what this was on this website. So I think it's about really coming down to the point. It's like design systems that allow you to filter for the things that are genuinely interesting to you, that force you to be deliberate and limit the amount that you can capture. This is where pen and paper comes in. And then, you know, prioritize out of those things. So it is like, what is it? Filter, capture, prioritize. You know, and I think the biggest issue is the front end. Most people don't filter. Hang tight.
You know what I call that?
I gotta refill some wine.
Oh, we're pausing.
pausing for wine.
Pause for wine.
All right.
Yeah, I was gonna kick off right there. You mind if I pick that up?
Go for it.
All right. Oh, make sure there's no tinkle sound in the background. It sounds like you're peeing. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yep.
All right, so you know what I call that, though, is a single source of truth. So this idea that we have all this information living in all these different softwares, this is where I think the true power of automation comes in. And it's funny because I'm known in some circles as being the Airtable expert, but in fact, I think it's like bigger than that. Airtable is simply a software that allows us to consolidate this information, but I tend to be more software agnostic than that, even though my branding would suggest otherwise. What I'm far more fascinated in personally is finding a way to consolidate this information into one place. Because why would you, and to your original point, Srini, why would you have 30 different browser tabs open when you should have one? And all that information could be in that one space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it's an issue of not knowing how to make all that information appear in one place.
Yeah. So there are a couple of tools that I use, that I wanted to share that have been really beneficial for me.
Yeah.
So one is I use a browser called Sidekick, which is really helpful for dealing with tab clutter because it allows you to organize things into workspaces and work sessions. So you can be like, all right, this is my, sort of work session. So that's been really helpful. The other idea that is really useful is something called a stimulus queue and a back burner. You know, two things that come from Todd Henry, who has been a guest here before, as well as Scott Belsky's book, Making Ideas Happen. So the stimulus queue is exactly what Mary's talking about. Like, you've got all this stuff that you're interested in. So part of it is, just saying, okay, like, I have all this stuff I'm interested in. Let me just capture it all in one place and then set aside a specific time when you're going to go through it. The other thing that you can do is have what Scott Belsky calls a back burner. And so what he says about the back burner is that it just keeps your ideas and possible future actions you might take to make those ideas happen in one place. And then he even suggests doing sort of a recurring monthly back burner review. And he said, ritualize the time that you spend revisiting half-baked ideas that might someday transform your work or life. And the funny thing is, that honestly, I can't tell you how many hundreds of half-baked ideas that I've had. I mean, like, the idea of a book based on surf metaphors was a half-baked idea I wrote down before anybody ever wanted to publish it. So I put it down in a notebook, and 4 years later, when my writing coach Robin is like, what do you think about surfing as an organizing metaphor? I'm like, that's convenient. I actually have that entire structure written down already in a notebook. And the funny thing is, I didn't even have to look back at the notebook because I wrote it down. I remembered it. Pretty much all of it. And so those are two big ones. Of course, Mem is my go-to. I am a huge fan of Mem for capturing information. I think Airtable to me is great for managing process and workflow, but I think as far as managing content and knowledge, Mem is hard to beat because, for the kind of thing that Mary's talking about, right? Bookmarking, snippets, stuff like that. My goal with Mem is really to get to universal Mem where I don't use anything else. If I could do everything within Mem, that's what, and I'm sure the founders of Mem are very thrilled about this idea. I'm like,
of course. Let's do that.
Well, I need you guys to build a few things to make that possible. We're close. Like, I'm very close, to the point where I can pretty much get everything into Mem and not have to leave it. I just need to get other people to do the same. Like, now when people want me to share information with them, I don't actually send them emails. I share a mem.
Right. Which is exasperating for me, who doesn't know mem. And I'm like, what the hell is this? What do I do with this?
All you have to do is show up and click on a link. But the thing is, all the information you need for this episode is right there. Like, you can click on links and everything, right? So, I think that the big thing here is really, looking at this from the lens of two things. Like, one, what can you eliminate that's not as important as you think it is? Like, I think we tend to overemphasize the importance of the content that shows up in our lives. And then the other is, okay, now that I've decided what to eliminate, how do I create a process that allows me to synthesize, reflect on, and apply this information so that it evolves from knowledge into wisdom. And I think that that's where I would really, you know, say you will start to find these issues getting resolved. And look, the thing is that we're not immune to any of this. I'm sure I clicked on Facebook once or twice during this episode, mainly for the sake of an example. But I'm sure I did, even when Gareth was like, you know, talking to me, and we're both on video, and I'm sure two of us has like picked up our phone or something like that. You know, so we're not immune to the things that we're telling you. We've just made an effort to try to make these things part of our lives as much as possible. Like, I don't think we're anywhere as near as hardcore as Cal Newport.
No, Cal seems pretty hardcore.
And the results speak for themselves. I mean, you kind of look at that and you're like, all right, so we can borrow from that. I mean, the goal here isn't for you to become like a Cal Newport or anybody else, but to really look at what you can learn from them. And I think, to me, I think when you stop confusing information with knowledge and wisdom, that goes a long way to dealing with, you know, digital overwhelm. You layer on top of that all the sort of productivity strategies of good systems, eliminating distractions, you know, like, you know, creating spaces that facilitate the behavior you want. But then you have this underlying layer, because once you do all of that, if you're still kind of trapped in this information consumption mode where you're consuming a lot but creating nothing, or consuming but not learning, like, and as you've learned, two idiots, you know, who have college degrees don't even know the fucking capitals of the states they grew up in. Like, that's how bad this issue is. So,
for the record, everybody, I do know the capitals of the states I grew up in.
Yeah, you only grew up, that's easy. That's because he grew up in one state. How many of you who grew up in one state? If you grew up in only one state, then you don't remember the capital. I'm sorry to tell you, you're an idiot.
Yeah. I think that's the lowest bar that we could possibly set, right? If you don't know the capital of the one state you grew up in,
I didn't know the capital of the state that I lived in, but, you know, and as saying. An adult.
Yeah.
But,
well,
yeah. I knew that Sacramento was the capital of California. I can't believe that.
When we point a finger at someone else, we have three pointing back at ourselves.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Come on. Think about it. We couldn't name the capitals of countries. We couldn't name the capitals of states. And we were both in honors geography.
I don't think there was honors geography in high school, and we didn't have one. But anyways, I was an honors student, so it should imply.
All I did was memorize a map. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, though. I go back to what you were saying. That's useless. It's a useless way to learn, to memorize stuff. The amount of stuff that I had to memorize when I was a kid that actually contributed to me productively in my adult life, I think is minimal. And the sad thing is, I came from a family of educators who promoted that kind of learning. That's the saddest thing.
But they didn't know any better, you know?
But isn't that their responsibility? I'm sorry. Like, I'm not trying to be like harsh on my mother, who made her career around educating children, but granted, my mother also educated kindergartners. That was her her age range. And maybe memorization is required at that point so that you have a foundation with which to build upon. But I don't know. There has to be some responsibility there, because memorization is sad.
Yeah, I mean, we could do an entire episode on education. Do you know how many? We have so many interesting clips from different guests talking about this. I mean, yeah, maybe we should do a discussion on education reform. I mean, both of us are kind of, you know, interesting byproducts of education that should have worked and it didn't the way it was supposed to.
And we're both children of educators. You know, my parents met when they were teaching at Catholic school together.
Yeah. And my dad's a professor. So like, yeah, it'd be interesting. That actually would be a good episode. It's like, you know, the perspective on higher education from two people who were raised by educators.
Oh, man. But here's the thing. I have a lot of high education clients and I don't want to totally shit on their business model. But hey, you know what? Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, we're not shitting on a business model. I mean, but we need to talk about the things that matter when it comes to that, because I think if anything we learned from this episode is that information doesn't equate to knowledge.
Right. It's not enough just to give somebody a degree and say bye-bye. But that, my friends, sounds like the perfect topic for another episode.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic for another episode. So Mary, thank you so much for sending your voicemail. You gave us a lot to talk about. And, you know, this was actually a fun topic because we both have a lot to say about it. Gareth built a business dealing with this issue, and I have pretty much used all of this. I mean, at this point, I'm kind of building a business from some of it too.
He is with MEM.
MEM so Consulting. If you want to learn more about my approach to knowledge management, you can learn more at maximizeyouroutput.com. And if you go to maximizeyouroutput.com/smartnotes, all one word, you can get our free note-taking course on how to take smart notes and how to manage knowledge. So if you have any questions, as always, feel free to leave us a voicemail like Mary did. We will play your voicemail on air. And if you don't want us to play your voicemail on air, but you have a question, just tell us. And we won't play the voicemail on air. We'll just read your question out loud. But if you want, we'll give you a shout out. And if you have any friends, tell them to subscribe, because the more people that subscribe, the better, because, you know, the world needs more people thinking like me and Gareth, because, you know, we want people to have myopic viewpoints.
Yeah. Please be myopic. Think like us. And yeah, we'll all just live in a bubble together. Consume more of our media.
That right there is the whole point, is be deliberate about what you consume and question what you consume. Gareth, anything else to add?
No, I think we overdid it. Hope we got your question answered, Mary. If we didn't, let us know and we'll take another swing at it.
Yeah, if we couldn't answer your question in an hour, then Gareth and I need to have a conversation about our own competence and our own and our own ability to actually create and develop knowledge and wisdom. So
yeah.
For everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch. The skills that are essential for standing out and thriving, no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here, like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.